continues in the life of Joseph, reading in chapter 37 of Genesis, and from the 12th verse. Genesis chapter 37, and from verse 12. Now, Joseph's brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel, or Jacob, remember both names are interchangeable, and Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I am looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the desert. Don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's send him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, he said, in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son. So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Amen, and may God add his blessing to this reading of his most holy word. Now, will you turn, please, to the passage we read earlier in Genesis chapter 37. Before we went off for our October break, I made use of a computer program which offered to print out a route for me. We were travelling to Loughborough down in England. You feed in where you are leaving from and where you are going to. And this program will tell you how many miles you have to travel, how long it will take you to complete the journey, and how much the cost will be in terms of petrol if you travel at 56 miles per hour on average. It lets you choose a number of alternatives. You can choose the shortest route, you can choose the quickest route, you can choose the cheapest route, or you can decide that you will travel through some scenic spot or some place of noted historical interest. You get to put all sorts of information in order to get the most attractive, the most desirable route given to you. Our Christian lives, however, are lived on a quite different plane. God does not always choose the easiest route, or what appears to us to be the shortest distance in order to get us from A to B. At times his detours and diversions seem to make no sense to us at all. And we have no idea from one day to the next where we are going to travel on our Christian pilgrimage, or what it's going to cost us to be God's man or God's woman in a particular place. Perhaps if we did have some idea, we might be more reluctant about starting out on the path of Christian discipleship. God does not always take us by the way we think is most obvious, or to the places we consider to be most suitable. In other words, there is a very real element of mystery in his planning. But one thing we can be absolutely certain of, and this was certainly Joseph's conviction at the end of his life, God's ways are always, always good. I wonder, do you believe that this evening? God's ways are always good. And the story of Joseph is in some measure here to convince us of that. Joseph could not but help be aware of the fact that he lived in a hostile environment at home. His brothers had made no secrecy of their jealousy or their hatred. Put yourself for a moment in his shoes, constantly aware of those little cliques, dagger eyes pointing towards you as they whisper the one to the other under their breath. That is an unenviable environment to grow up in. And it makes Joseph's willingness to go and look for his brothers and inquire after their welfare in verse 13 all the more remarkable. Notice that he does not seek to find some excuse for this duty. He doesn't say, well, Dad, we've got lots of servants, why not send one of them? I don't get on too well with my brothers. They don't see eye to eye with me in all that I think and do. His response is immediate and positive. He did not perform, notice, this task half-heartedly. It would have been the easiest thing in the world for Joseph, having arrived at Shechem, to discover that his brothers weren't in the place he expected to find them, nor in the place they said they would be, to have gone home and said, well, Dad, I looked. I did my best. They weren't there. They must have moved on somewhere else. We'll need to wait until they send word of their whereabouts. I tried, Dad, I really tried, but I couldn't find them. Just and looks until eventually he finds someone who is able to point him in the right direction. Joseph put himself to a great deal of trouble to find his brother. His brother's hatred of him never dulled his love for them. And one cannot help but think of the tears of love which Jesus shed on his way to Jerusalem for the last time, when he saw that city that he knew would reject him, despite his determination to give all that he was to this people, they would reject him. And not only would they reject him, but they would suffer the consequences of that rejection. And Jesus wept for that city. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I would have loved to draw you to myself as a hen gathers its chicks under its wings, but you would not. What a parallel there is there between the love of Joseph for his brother, his determination to do his best for them, and the love of Jesus for his own people. It is very clear from verse 18 that the momentum of sin had traveled far in Joseph's brother's heart. What is there response? They saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Not only were they jealous of their brother, and not only had that jealousy turned into hatred, but that hatred produced the fruit of attempted murder. And in order to understand this chapter, we need to turn forward to Genesis chapter 42 and read verse 21, when 22 years later, the brothers remembered this grim day. And they said to one another, surely We are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he was. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us. Here is a little cameo, a little insight, not mentioned in chapter 39, but here is the picture. The brothers are lowering Joseph into the well, and he's crying out, "Have mercy! Let me out of this place! Don't leave me here, please! You are my brothers, flesh of my flesh!" And he pled with these men. And the hard-heartedness of Joseph's brothers comes into focus as we recognize that they sat down to eat a hearty meal while he cried out to them for mercy. Now some may, in some measure, be able to identify with Joseph. You may find yourself thinking from time to time, "No one seems to care, but I am suffering." Are others too indifferent? Can't they see the damage that has been done to me? Are they so blind to my bruised emotions? Perhaps the worst thing about being down in the well of suffering is to be persuaded that no one cares. No one listens to our cries. If we are people of influence or power or can help others in some way, then people care. But if we lose that influence, that power, that reputation, that usefulness, then our phone calls are ignored, and people are too busy to come and sympathize with us and hear us out. Now, this indifference is not only the product of an unbelieving world. Sadly, it is all too easily found within the Christian church. Remember that Paul, writing to the Philippians, admonished them in chapter 2 and verse 4 in this way. He writes, "Each of you should look not only after your own interests, but also the interests of others." Here was a church, a New Testament church. And we tend to think of the New Testament church as being flawless. Those were the days in which to live. But Paul writes to the Philippians and says, "Why are you so self-centered? You're looking after your own interests instead of the interests of others." Again in verse 21 of chapter 2 he writes, "For everyone looks out for his own interests and not those of Jesus Christ." He is concerned about the welfare of the church and of the gospel. And he's saying, where are these men and women who have signed up for Christ's service? Why is it that the church here at Philippi isn't making greater strides forward in terms of growth and evangelism? I says, here is the answer. Everyone is concerned with their own interests rather than those of Jesus Christ. Christians are not immune to indifference. What about Christian husbands who are insensitive to the frustration and the bruised feelings of their wives? Or what of those parents who are too busy to hear the hurt cries of their adolescent children, or neighbors who do not see the desperate, longing glances of those next door that says, "Do you have time for me?" We can sit down to eat our hearty meals, purposefully closing our ears to the cries of those who are in that well of suffering. The saddest moment of a person's life is invariably not the occasion when they have suffered some great injustice at the hands of others, but when they have failed to heed the despairing cry of someone in need. And it is this which weighs most heavily on our hearts. Now I want you to think of the effects of this sin on Joseph's brothers through the years. The scene at the well and his lamentable cries was not something they could easily obliterate from their memories. They would have tried to lock that skeleton away in the most inaccessible cupboard in their lives. But out it would jump in all sorts of unguarded moments. They would hear that piteous voice and see his agonized face in the dreams of the night. During our holiday, a day visit to Alton Towers gave us a view of the ride, which my children assure me is the most talked of ride in the United Kingdom. It's called Nemesis. Now, Nemesis was the Greek goddess of retribution. And I suppose, as I saw people being gyrated at great speed along a geometrically complex route, feet dangling widely in the air, I thought the ride well named Retribution. There is, however, a more terrifying nemesis, and that is the nemesis of the awakened conscience. Our sin carries within it the seeds of its own punishment. As Joseph's brothers down through the years would discover only too well. And we need to learn from their bad experience and determine to respond to those who are crying in the well of suffering within our earshot before it is too late. You will notice that Joseph's brothers have a change of plan in verse 26. Judah, probably the worst of the bunch, suggested that they might spare his life and instead sell him. Listen to his words. "After all, he is our brother, our flesh and blood. Have you ever heard such appalling hypocrisy? Let's not hurt poor Joseph. He's our brother. Let's just sell him as a slave into Egypt instead, because we love him so much and care for him." It was the fact of a prospect of making some money which occasioned this change of plan, and nothing whatsoever to do with a residue of brotherly love, and affection on the part of Joseph's brother. Judah had simply added insult to injury. Let's not kill him. He is our brother, flesh of our flesh. Let's just make some money out of him instead. Reuben, of course, was planning to save his brother, but his plans proved to be quite ineffective.